There's some kind of misunderstanding here.
What?
Well, you're American, okay?
Okay. What kind of American are you?
I got kicked out because I was doing the Cape Fear Robert De Niro thing. I had a big cigar and I was laughing like a maniac.
Hessa, can I confess to you that I actually was doing, not smoking a big cigar, but I was laughing as hard as Robert De Niro at the end of this movie. Hello, everybody. It's Thursday, April 25th. We've got Movie Sign. It's a movie episode. I feel like a lot of you have been itching for this one, but today we are discussing a dark, ominous warning of what could potentially happen in this country. That's right. What if America fought a civil war? I know it seems crazy and impossible to consider, but I fear, listeners, that we are going down that dark road. And finally, there is a movie that has arrived to wake us up out of our stupor and announce that we must protect journalists and we must heed their warnings of journalism about how bad war truly is. It's Alex Garland's Civil War.
Like, it never would have been a good time to make this movie, honestly. But, like, making a now, movie about how vital American journalists are during wartime now?
It's really...
What?
It's crazy.
And, of course, we're joined by Hessa Denny, co-host of Movie Mindset. Hello. Coincidentally, Movie Mindset Season 2 launched yesterday, where we will be talking about much better movies than Civil War. But, okay, Felix, this is your point is exactly what I was thinking throughout this whole movie. And I would just like to say, though, like that, just to kick off our conversation, I know everyone is expecting me to come on here and slam this movie and trash it. And the thing is, I will do that, because it is about 90 minutes of the most sententious dog shit I've ever seen on screen. And I was fucking, like, gritting my teeth throughout it. However, to be fair and objective as a film critic, I should have to share that the 90 minutes leading up to the ending of this movie was worth the price of admission to, how shall I put this, see projected on screen in a movie a very similar movie that's been playing in my head every time I watch a State Department press conference. I know, and the fact that how much I enjoyed the end of this movie, I know it goes against everything the filmmaker was intending to do, and that's why I enjoyed it so much. But Catherine and I left the theater last night elated and overjoyed at the vision of a better world that is possible, provided we turn the city of Washington, D.C. and the evil pigs who run it into a Call of Duty Modern Warfare level.
Yeah, it was fun to watch a Joe Biden stand-in get killed like FDG Duck. What would it be like? What would it be like if King Von's ops were the president? Well, we finally answered that question.
It's kind of like a utopian vision, honestly. Like, Washington gets destroyed, journalists are shot on sight, and and you can smoke inside, which was a crazy little detail at the beginning.
That was the one sort of like, ooh, sci-fi dystopia. I was like, you know, if America ever devolved into the state of another sort of fractal, violent civil conflict,
Wait, what do you mean another?
Smoking indoors.
No, it's really incredible. And like the first thing I noticed was the soundtrack is insane.
Drops in this movie are so offensive. Here's the thing. To paraphrase our Hess and I's friend Josh Lewis from Sleazoids, to paraphrase his Letterboxd review of this movie, I thought this was dead on point. Alex Garland thought he was making the American Come and See, but what he actually turned in was JCPenney Has Fallen. And on top of that, I will just add my two cents that bro thought he was really cooking up Full Metal Jacket, but how I would describe this movie is pretty cool t-shirt. And the obnoxious needle drops are just but one example.
Oh, the t-shirts are crazy. I did notice the t-shirt game in this movie. It was very egregious. And like, the needle drops, it's very like, I think he was trying to make Z, but he accidentally made like Crash 2004 one.
Absolutely. The movie I was thinking of the most while watching this, or I guess it was a miniseries. I was thinking of Threads, the amazing British post-apocalyptic, post-nuclear war miniseries, which is like incredible and was also obviously made by a British person.
Yeah.
Or a collection of British people. But this is not that. The thing that shocked me the most about this movie is, like, you have this entire, like, crazy premise that everyone is talking about. Like, everyone did exactly what the producers of this movie wanted them to do, which was talk about this movie nonstop. Like, post the map, the political map of the universe of this movie, talk about how wrong it is. Just constant, you know, constant discourse about this movie. But when you get to the actual movie, the actual interesting things like that, like the universe, the way that the militaries would break down, anything like that takes a side stage. And it's just one of many movies about what good bastards journalists are. How many fucking movies like this do we need? Journalists are real sons of bitches, but they'll tell you the goddamn fucking truth. When the truth is fit to print, you cocksucker. I don't care if it's a byline or a deadline or a slug line. Get me 2 shots of whiskey and I'll tell you what the fuck's up, fucko. That's his entire movie. It's so it's like we have so many movies like that. Why did we need another?
Like, it took me so long into the movie to be like, wait, what is everyone talking about? I was like, the journalists in this are... like, they suck. They're insane.
They don't do any journalism. Like, okay, like, just taking photos of dead bodies. Like, and here's what I'm wondering. The young girl in this movie, the younger woman who's, like, in her 20s, who's just
Priscilla?
Wants, like, Kirsten Dunst. Yeah, Priscilla Presley. Who is she sending this film to? They show her developing film in a war zone. But, like, well, where is this being published? Her fucking scrapbook?
My theory is that, because at one point they say, and this was one of the things that made me think, like, oh, he's doing like a criticism of journalism. Because there's a point where they're talking, Kirsten Dunst and Priscilla Presley, and they basically are like, oh, what are your parents like? Oh, they're both still alive. They live in a farm in the middle of nowhere, and they pretty much ignore all this stuff. So I think like the subtext is like, they just want their parents to believe them or something. So I think that Priscilla is sending the pictures to her parents being like, see, look how fucking bad. I bet if I died, you wouldn't even care. Like, a letter to your parents.
But Felix, to your point about how this movie is just an appalling dick suck to not just journalists, but war correspondents. After seeing this movie, I don't think I could have any less respect for the role of a Western war photojournalist. Your role, like, this is the stupidest job imaginable. The role is best summed up in a scene in this movie in which Kirsten Dunst is having, like, flashbacks to the other conflicts, the other violent conflicts that she's stuck a camera in front of. And there's a scene where a guy is getting a tire put around him and doused in gasoline before being set on fire. And she just gets up nice and close to him and just snaps a photo as his face catches fire. And I'm like, yeah, that pretty much sums up what your job is. You'd be like, yeah, could you just hold that for a pose real quick? Perfect. And that's like, a Pulitzer right there.
It's paralleled later when Priscilla is taking a photo of this like combatant during like the Battle of JCPenney. She like takes a picture of this like dying combatant and his friend, and it's like, that's how you earn your wings in the photojournalism game. You take a picture of a dying black person in pain.
With your camera. Yeah.
It's like, there's so much like I really do think he did this on purpose, but like every single person who gets killed and like photojournalized is not a white person, except for like Kirsten Dunst at the very end. Spoilers. But And I do think he was trying to make a point of like, these are the people who really suffer when we fight like this. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about? It's so incoherent.
It is one of the most baffling movies ever made that has a real budget. Like, I guess if you put a gun to my head, what is the point of this movie? You have to tell me or I'm going to pull the trigger. I would guess primarily journalists are good bastards, obviously. Secondarily, our divisions divide us. I think that's the subtext of this movie.
But Phil, to your earlier point, like in a lot of the discourse surrounding this movie in its release, and certainly due to the comments of its director, Alex Garland, people have, I think, seized on like the wrong aspects. Because like, to me, this movie was not in, was barely ambiguous about its politics. It was very clear to me, if you're watching the movie, the Western forces are the good guys and Ron Swanson's evil fascist federal government are the bad guys. Yeah. And nor do I really care about like the thing everyone latched onto about like, oh, why would Texas and California unite? That blah, blah, blah. That's so unrealistic. Whatever. It's a movie. I don't care. The element of unreality in this film that struck me as the most discordant in terms of like me just rolling my eyes and doing the jack off motion as watching it is the idea that in a situation like the one this movie depicts, where vast swaths of the country have broken down into like fractal internecine conflict between multiple different state and non-state actors, where mass graves are being filled by like what people who were once your neighbors, the idea that anyone in that conflict would respect your fucking press credentials is ludicrous to me. There are so many moments in this movie, they just flash a press badge and they're like, oh, we were going to execute you a second ago, but obviously we all still believe in the freedom of the press.
No, like when she gives Priscilla Presley, who, I mean, Kaylee Spaney, I'll stop doing this bit, but like when Kirsten Dunst gives her her like fluorescent vest, the first thought that popped into my mind was like, a hitman mission taking place there, and it's like, welcome to New York 47. And that's like one of the outfits you can do is like a press outfit. You can just like sneak it, go anywhere. It's like an invincibility, it's like a cheat code. Like
but like, yeah, like there are multiple scenes in this movie where they're like taking part in ops and they're like right behind the guy's shoulder as they're like, we're throwing flares, we're suppressing fire. And like, then they're just like pop out to take a picture. And then the guys doing the shooting are like, yeah, that's cool with us. Yeah. Just like, you know, try not to get in the way or anything. But yeah, of course we want you taking our photos doing this. It's just like, it's this movie's outsized and obnoxious and offensive reverence for Western journalists that, Felix, you touched on. And here's the thing. This movie was obviously written, produced, and made before October 7th. And what they thought the import of this movie was going to be that depicts airstriking civilians and intentionally killing journalists is just about the most evil thing imaginable really lands like a dud, especially when you consider that the Nick Offerman character was, I thought, a fairly obvious Trump stand-in. But no, yeah. Like they're just like, there's like, it lands like a dud for the liberal sensibilities of the people who made it, because like the world that this movie depicts is happening right now, but it's being done by the current U.S. government.
Yeah, and the journalists there, like that these characters are portraying, are basically like, oh, we can just like wait over here, like in Tel Aviv, and like we'll just have some coffee at this cafe if you guys don't want us taking pictures of this stuff. Like, don't worry. Yeah.
I mean, like, more journalists have been killed in Gaza than in all of World War II in the past 6 months.
Yeah,
to nary a peep from their colleagues like Kirsten Dunst or Wagner Moura. Well, let's just dive into the movie itself and just sort of describe what happens, because honestly, most of this movie is like a road trip movie with like stops in Come and See. But like it really lands like a dud. It is really boring until the last 20 or 30 minutes, which we will get to, which I simply must say, state for the record, I probably had more fun watching than any recent experience in a movie theater. But like, you know, it begins and we see President Ron Swanson sort of like addressing the nation about the great and historic victory over the secessionist forces that the soldiers of the United States of America are, you know, soon to have. And then it cuts to New York City, Brooklyn, New York, baby. And it's like Kirsten Dunst is covering people like trying to get water from some sort of like government police supply truck. And then she meets Kaylee Spaney. That's the actress's name, the one who played Priscilla Presley. She gets brained by a police baton. And then she's like, you know, you really need to wear your journalist credentials or otherwise, you know, people just might kill you. And then there's a bombing and like, you know, bodies are strewn everywhere. But then we cut to like the beating heart of this movie. The hotel bar where these good sons of bitches just mix it up.
And whiskey, they reveal flows like truth in this son of a bitches hangout. Bring your cock sucking motherfucking log line if you ain't a journalist, you can get the fuck out.
It's so like, could you imagine the conversations going on there? I think we hear like a snippet of one conversation. And it's like, yeah, I was in Des Moines and I ran into her and she was wearing my wife's wedding ring or something. And
oh, I'm like, bro. All I could think covering is like, a war is crazy.
All I could think was like, oh, that's the journalist that wrote the hit piece on Ben. And he's like, that's what he's describing.
So, yeah, there's Kirsten Dunst is the main character, and she's sort of a, you know, hard bitten and somewhat jaded war correspondent, or as I would describe her, a war tourist who goes to the worst places on earth and just sort of captures people's souls for her career.
See, it's almost a good movie in the other direction. Like, it's yes. almost so, yeah. like, which is why I truly cannot understand the way Alex Garland, like, talks about this movie and pretty much everything. Because it's, like, really the main question I was asking at this point was, like, who are they doing this for? Like, who's looking at these pictures? And
yes. where is there? There's not a single editor in this movie. They don't yeah. interview a single person until the, like, last 10 seconds of the movie. But like, they're not really doing journalism. They're like, and also it's just like, if war was happening in this country, would it be really be like necessary that we get a shot of it on the cover of Time magazine? I think people would pretty much understand what was going on.
Yeah.
Wouldn't there be like a billion people recording all of this shit all the time?
Yes. And the fact that they're shooting on film in this movie was about, and I guess they had like some explanation for it because like Wi-Fi has gone away because of our, you know, the damage done to the infrastructure by this horrible civil war. But I just like, they show them developing film like in the car. And I was just, yeah, like I was just wondering, like, who are they sending all of these images of war to? Where are they being published? And it's like not until like 2/3 of the way through the movie, they say they're with Reuters or something.
Yeah. And that's like, that's where the message of the movie really comes out. It's like, oh, we need to listen to Reuters at all times.
And, we need to listen to them. Look at Reuters. Look at yeah. the photos. And feel it's like, something.
What do we do about it? Like, anything but a civil war. Do not have a civil war.
Yeah. That's exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That really that sums is it. That yeah. really, yeah. I guess that's the message of the movie. Like,
yeah.
Look, no matter how tough times are, do not divide the country into thirds. Kill each other. I know it seems attractive, yeah. but
and I really think like the thing about California and Texas teaming up, I think it's like intentionally like, but their politics don't align. And I think the message, the brilliant message, you could see Alex Garland like smirking when he was writing this, being like, oh, it doesn't matter. The only politics, because there, this movie does have politics, but its politics are xenophobia is bad, and so is mass murder and like killing people, and so is yeah. a civil war, and a civil yeah. war is really bad.
No, yeah, and so basically, like I said, it's a road trip from New York City to Washington D.C. through the war-torn countryside of, you know, central and western Pennsylvania, and then like, you know, on down to Virginia. And so joining Kirsten Dunst and Kaylee Spanny, who was like, you know, Kirsten Dunst, like I said, she's this cynical, hard-bitten veteran war correspondent, and Kaylee Spanny is like the young Jimmy Olsen character who's like, you're my idol. You're my idol, Lee Smith. My other idol was the first woman to photograph Dachau. And that's just what I've always wanted to do with my life, is to experience atrocities and record them with my Leica.
And her name is also Lee Smith, the first woman to photograph Dachau. And she really makes a very ham-fisted point of saying that to Kirsten Dunst.
That part really pissed me off because it's like, okay, like, Alex Garland, you're aware that I pirated this movie and that I'm playing a game on the other screen. You're, like, trying to confuse me because you know that I don't want to pay attention to this movie. You're deliberately saying things that will baffle me.
Well, I mean, like, it's hard to ignore, like, the director's obnoxious comments in, like, his interviews with Pod Save America in the lead-up to this movie.
Wants to combat right-wing extremism, it needs to be in the business of winning elections. And you do not win an election without usually persuading people of the other side to come and join you. And you don't do that by screaming at them and telling them they're unethical. And what I really want to do is remove what I see as dangerous extremists from occupying mainstream political parties.
The main one of which that was stuck in my head throughout this, watching this entire movie, was he said, I think to the pod Johns, his comment was something along the lines of like, left and right are just arguments over the like political and social and economic system that rules a country. This is not something to kill people over. And I'm like, well, that basically describes like every war that's ever been fought. Like,
yeah.
It's just the economic argument and political system that governs your life. This is not something to fight a war over.
Yeah.
If you're not supposed to fight a war over that, then like, what are you supposed to fight a war over?
Your wife cheating on you isn't, it's just creates a chemical imbalance in your brain. It's not something to like, well, I guess that's a bad example because it is bad to kill your wife. But it's like the main thing people fight over and kill each other over. It's crazy. That's just ideology.
It's not, ideology isn't real life. War is real life. And you would know that if you looked at the work of the many correspondents who cover war. Okay, joining them on this odyssey to Washington, D.C., which is hilariously their reason for going to Washington, D.C., which is like the epicenter of like the most intense fighting in this Civil War scenario, is to interview the fascist leader of the United States, is to interview Ron Swanson.
Yeah.
And they just want to get him on camera and ask like, hey, how do you feel about this whole Civil War thing? Got anything to say to the millions who have been killed so far? Which is like dumb enough. And like the journalist, not the photojournalist, the interviewer in this movie is played by the Brazilian actor Wagner Moura, an actor I really like from the Elite Squad movies. And of course, you're playing Pablo Escobar in Narcos. But he does the least journalism out of anyone. And he's just there to be like, I love war. It gets my dick hard, bro. All right.
He's drunk all the time. And it's like, oh, like they don't really make a statement about it or like, it's like, oh, is this some like, is he going to get like drunk and like fuck up at some point? Or like, is there going to be a payoff to this like character detail? But it's like, no, he just loves to party. Like, it's truly that he just loves drinking and like hanging out with the bros and photographing some, you know, some cool combat footage.
And then finally rounding out this, the built Ford tough excursion to Washington, D.C. is... And, you know, like Stephen McKinley is an actor I also quite like. You might remember him from Lady Bird and Dune, where he played Thufir Hawit. But joining them on this excursion through war-torn America is, I'm sorry to Stephen McKinley, one of the fattest and oldest men that they could possibly find in their war journalism party.
This was like anti-suspense. Like the moment I saw this character, I was like, let me guess, he's going to get shot while they try to get away from some bad guy.
Yeah.
He's going to,
bingo,
one bullet wound is going to incapacitate him because he's so fat and old.
And you know what?
No way that happened.
And you know what, Felix? It was also anti-suspense because had the bullet not got him, probably diabetes would a couple weeks later.
He was like on his deathbed. He was one of the least alive characters I've ever seen in a movie.
No, he might as well have been like
98 years old. He's 4'2", 700 pounds.
He has a cane.
His skin is the texture of a Lay's chip from the bottom of a bag. I'm sorry, he's a great actor, but he's like, hey, would you mind if I tagged along? And could we get a separate car to carry all my catheters at once? It's like, yeah, this guy's living through the fucking movie.
Yeah, so they set off on their journey, and basically like I said, the first 90 minutes of this movie is just them encountering things on the road that are like disturbing, and they're like, ooh, God, imagine if America was scary.
Well,
imagine if bad things happened in this country.
Yeah, it's so like, I mean, and when they set off, the needle drop is Rocket USA by Suicide.
Yep,
and
it's one of two Suicide songs used in this movie.
It's truly like the soundtrack is so like good in a weird way. Like the opening credits, the opening title needle drop is Love Fingers by Silver Apples, which is such a crazy and weird pull that I was like, okay, is he cooking?
This is what I found offensive about the needle drops, because they are, you know, two songs by Suicide, a song by De La Soul. It's like very cool music that I think is probably pulled from Alex Garland's like on repeat on Spotify.
Oh, absolutely.
And I find that so offensive in the context of a war movie that's supposed to be morally serious. Because like the contrast I draw is the Needle Drops and Full Metal Jacket, which are absurd, horrifying, and haunting because they're all like gag songs, like Surf and Bird and Woolly Bully. They're these like sort of like a joke Dr. Demento style songs that when contrasted with like the horrors of Way City, like that really lands. But in this movie, it's just sort of like, oh, look at these disturbing images set to some of my favorite tunes.
Because I think like part of the message of the movie is supposed to be like, you people make me sick watching this movie about a civil war. It's like, it's really like, and part of it is like a movie is just like war photography. There's like this hope that you're going to have an image so shocking that it like fixes everyone by like solving
making
everything.
Them out of their stupor.
And you can't, it's so incoherent because you can't really tell if he thinks that's a real thing that's possible or if he's like begging us to make that possible, being like, maybe if I load an image of the Civil War with so much meaning that people will like sob when they see it. And it's like the image of, I guess, I mean, we'll get to it at the end, but it's, it doesn't really yeah. work. It's no, spoiler yeah. alert. It's and, not and effective.
Like but like this goes back to the thing of like this movie's conception of the media that exists in this like not too distant future is like the media that existed during the Vietnam War, you know, like it was of a completely different era. And like, not only do they not really do any journalism in this movie, it's just like, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, it's just like this movie's conception of what like journalists do in war zones seems of like a completely different era.
You know how like American Sniper, it was so close yet so far from being like one of the best movies ever made. Because yes. like if you just like turn it a little bit, if you just set it on a few degrees in the other direction, where you make American Sniper about this real guy who is a real sniper who really killed people and was really in special forces, but was also like an insane fucking liar.
Yeah.
Like one of the craziest liars ever in American public life.
They really should have done a New Orleans scene.
Yeah. if like American Sniper had just been like truer to life in that aspect, it would have been one of the like best movies ever made. With this movie, I don't know if it would have been one of the best movies ever made, but like, if they had meant for the point to be like how craven and shitty like American journalists are and actually have it so that like, yeah, Wagner Moura is too, he's too crazy and too much of a bastard, but he never accomplishes anything. They all suck. Like if they had done that, that might have been kind of interesting. But
yeah.
The only aspect this movie ever really goes for anything is with the firefights. And like I've seen a lot of stuff about how realistic the combat in this movie is, but that just it reminds me of, you know, they say that the worst reason to put something in a story when you're writing is because it really happened.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's just like,
yeah, Felix, to your point about like the combat in this movie and the violence in this movie. It's all done in a way that's supposed to be so gutting and disturbing to watch, but really it all just comes across like a video game. And the yeah. thing is, like, I keep coming back to Full Metal Jacket, which is a movie that is in many ways less violent than this one. But the violence in that movie really disturbs and horrifies you. Like, or it just like it exists in an alien moral universe. Whereas this movie, it's just like, I could not take any of it seriously. As atrocity after atrocity piles up, like in the first one they encounter, is that they're like trying to buy gas from some local militia. And then Kaylee Spanny sort of wanders off to see their sort of frontier justice for looters of these like two men who are like handcuffed to a ceiling, just slowly dying. And then at one point, one of the militia members with like an AR-15 is like, hey, we've been trying to decide what to do with these guys for weeks. I used to go to high school with this guy. What do you think we should do? Should we let him go or just shoot him right now? And she just sort of freezes and is like, And then Kirsten Dunst just comes in and is just like, we're journalists. We don't intervene. So we're journalists. Kill the motherfucker if you want. Doesn't
that
matter
would
to
violate
us.
The and prime like, directive.
Yeah, they will not violate the prime directive. And in the car, she's like, they probably would have killed him anyway. But to me, like, when someone asks you, should I kill this man in front of me, you or not, I would just simply say, yeah, don't do that.
Yeah.
I was like, if you're asking me, even as a joke, I would just say, yeah, don't execute this like handcuffed man in front of me right now.
But if she had intervened, that would have ruined the integrity of the one news source.
Of the Reuters Photojournalism Bureau.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one news source left in America. Jesse Singles Substack.
Yeah.
That's the one
that's where they're,
media
that's where they're sending
the
all
country.
These horrifying photos
yeah.
to.
Yeah.
They're like, we don't know why. It's the only one left.
It's Jesse Singles and Matt Yglesias' slow boring.
Guys, during the Civil War, the DIY HRT has gone through the roof, and we really need to talk about how there's no, you know... No, but this scene is really where I started to think maybe a civil war would be bad. You know, I really was starting to think that at this scene. And it is funny that that's like the primary message of this movie in like one of the only countries where the Civil War was good.
Yeah, that's such a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Hessa, what were they really fighting over in the original Civil War but an ideology about how best to govern the social economic fabric of American life? I mean, I think it was wrong of them to do that.
Yeah, they should have fought it over like who gets to do like take the first war photos ever. Something really important.
Well, but that gets into it, I think, is like some of the psychology of the director and the audience of this movie, which is like, I really don't think like psychologically this movie is really concerned about or cares about like, will America have another civil war? I think it is all about purging the Anglo mind of our guilt about all the shit we do to the rest of the world. And they're like, and then we just be like, oh, wouldn't that be bad if it happened to us? But also the fact that this movie is directed by a British person, I think he just wants to have the War of 1812 over again. I think this is like a covert wish fulfillment to see America destroyed, which if he had been honest about that, and that's certainly how I interpreted the ending of the movie and enjoyed it thoroughly, this movie could have been a lot better if it was willing to be, I don't know, less morally fucking just weighted and, you know, just sort of like sententious in its tone, that it leaned into the fantasy of like, yes, we would like to see the America destroyed.
Yeah, it's not to jump ahead, but like I think the politics really get revealed at the Jesse Plemons scene.
Yeah.
Which,
well, let's talk, because that's the scene that got a lot of, I mean, like, because like, look, they travel across America, they come across a bunch of other atrocities, they play some fun car pranks on each other, but like the Jesse Plemons scene is like they got a little juice out of that. You know, Jesse Plemons is still pretty scary when he wants to be.
Yeah.
And it's the scene everyone talked about from the trailer. So has to, go ahead.
Well, actually, before we get to that, I just remembered the scene where they go to the town where everything's fine. And that's like another one of the reasons that I thought like, oh, this is like a scathing critique of journalism, like, because it's like, oh, these are the people they're taking the pictures for. And they just don't give a fuck, like they don't care at all. And it's, I was like, oh, this is like kind of interesting, you know, like Felix said about how it just turning it a couple degrees would make it like a coherent movie almost. And but like it really is like that they're criticizing the people in the town for being like fine
for not wanting to die.
That was so weird to me, because it's like, okay, number one, bad thing you can do is fight a civil war. Number two, bad thing you can do, not care about the Civil War. Like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Before we get to the Jesse Plemons mass grave sequence, the scene with the sniper was really dumb too. Like they get involved with the sniper, and then there's like to the Jesse Signal blog. The sniper that kills the other sniper had painted nails. I don't know if you guys noted that.
Oh, yeah, of course. That was the sniper.
The sniper scene was so fucking stupid, because it's like, okay, I guess that one of the points of this movie is like, our divisions divide us. Division is divisive. Our polarization is polarizing and bad. But the point of the sniper scene is like, ideology or any of that, that doesn't matter right now. We're just two fucking apes on a spinning rock trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
Metal coming through a tube. And it's like, okay, does ideology matter or not? Like, yeah. What the fuck is your point? I've never seen a movie that like undermines itself and then re-undermines itself every 30 seconds quite like this one.
It kind of reminds me weirdly of Far Cry 2 in that like there will just be like soldiers fighting and any soldier you see will kill you, even though there are two factions and you do missions for them sometimes. It's like, it actually reminds me more of like Far Cry 5 because it's like there's a religious like death cult, you know, in America. And it's like in that movie, the religious death cult is a multicultural, gender diverse, like group. And it's like, what do they believe? Like, what the fuck is going on? Yeah. Like, are they racist or are they less racist than the rest of the world? Because it seems like I might be kind of rooting for them to win. And I feel like that's like the point of, you know, like I said, like of uniting Texas and California, of being like, oh, you can't tell because every side has bad eggs. And it's like, what the fuck?
It's like, if every side is bad, then like, who cares? Kind of like, yeah. You know, like,
who are you taking these pictures for?
Why is this bad? Yeah.
Soldier kills man. Like, it's so, that's the, those are the articles they're writing. Like, they're, after Jesse Plemons does that thing, like kills their two friends that like they just meet, and they meet the friends and the friends are like, oh, here are our full names. I hope we don't die in the next scene. Like Jesse Plemons executes their friends because they're Chinese, and they literally don't even bother to find out which side he's on run away.
Hesse, like this is where like, again, like I understand people's frustration with the lack of any clear, like who is doing like the killing here. It's just guys in uniforms doing atrocities. And like in that scene in particular, where Jesse Plemons is dumping lye into a mass grave with like hundreds of civilians. Another point that the directors of this movie, another parallel that they probably didn't want to draw to the current administration.
Yeah.
But like, you know, and it's like, it's played up like it's, they're sort of like scary, like, I don't know, like racist, like mass murderers or whatever. But like, you're like, okay, are they, what side are they on? And then the thing from the trailer where Jesse Plemons goes, they're like, we're Americans. And he goes, yeah, but what kind of Americans? They don't even answer that question. Like, he makes them at gunpoint say what state they're from. And they're like, Colorado, Missouri. And then he's like, yeah, okay, cool. And I'm like, wait, what side are they on? Like, I kept waiting for him to pull the trigger. And then like the Chinese guy, he's like, where are you from? And he's like, Hong Kong. And then he just shoots him dead immediately. I'm like, I'm sorry, I thought this was the American Civil War.
Yeah.
War II.
Yeah.
Why the fuck would he care that I thought he was going to kill them for being from Colorado or something, not being from fucking Hong Kong.
No. The Brazilian journalist is like, I'm from Florida, which is on another team in the Civil
yeah.
War.
Yeah.
It's really like, it's so insane. It's like the messages of this movie, like, don't start a civil war. Don't hate people just because they're Chinese. Like, don't don't kill a bunch of civilians. Like, you know, war journalists are so good because they take pictures. And it really is like so interesting to have the only kind of like real political thing in your movie be like, oh, xenophobia is bad, and just be like, but everyone is equally xenophobic. So again, it's like, just listen to Reuters, don't start a civil war, everything will be fine.
It reminds me of like if you made a movie out of the Robert Byrd white N-word speech. It's the same ideology, the same incoherence, just nothingness.
And right after the Jesse Plemons scene, where the Stephen McKinley character, he sort of hangs back because he's 80 years old and morbidly obese. He saves them by hitting Jesse Plemons with their car. But then he gets shot in the getaway attempt, per Felix's dead-on prediction that happened 40 minutes ago in this movie.
Yeah.
But like the next scene, Wagner Mora's character, Mr. War Tourist, Mr. War Junkie, is just screaming to himself. He's like, ah, I can't believe something this bad happened in a fucking war. And then the two Chinese guys who were executed in front of him, in the next scene, he's talking to another journalist and they're like, we heard what happened. And he's like, yeah, the Stephen McKinley character died. I can't believe they killed him. It's like, what about the other two Chinese guys? What the fuck?
Yeah, and he says specifically, but Stephen McKinley, they're like, oh, the White House is going to fall tonight, so we won't even get to interview the president. So Stephen McKinley died for nothing. And then it's, okay, what about your friend? What did he die for? No, or you just completely
being
forgotten?
Chinese.
That's
so
a better cause to die for, I guess.
Yeah.
No, but this is when I got up to have a cigarette when I was watching the movie, because I was like, this is so fucking stupid. But like, the Brazilian journalist guy is like, they get to the Western Forces, like a base camp, and it cuts to like the Brazilian journalist guy, and he's describing what just happened, like to a soldier. He's like, we just saw a bunch of people with like, you know, I don't want to cause a scene or anything, but there was like a mass grave back there, and there's guys like filling it. And Kirsten Dunst is like, she doesn't need to hear this. And it cuts to the soldier he's talking to, and she's also Chinese. And it's like, you know, Alex Garland was like, this is going to blow their mind, this reverse shot of like, of like, I don't even know what point he was trying to make, but it was like intentional of being like, oh, like, he can't even describe to this woman like what just happened. And Kirsten Dunst is like, let's not do journalism here, you know, let's not describe what just happened to anyone, you know, they have to buy the newspaper or something. I it's so baffling. It scrambled my brain. I got up and I went to have a cigarette, and then they didn't let me back into the theater because it was like 12:30, and I was just like, oh, like, I was just in a movie, can I go back and finish it? And the lady was like, no, sorry. I was like, all right. And then I finished the cam rip at home. I was, you know.
And there's a scene, like, right after they arrive in Charlottesville, Virginia, by the way. And believe me, Charlottesville is a name that gets checked a half dozen times in this movie, and my eyes rolled out of my head each fucking time. But they sort of link up with the Western Forces, who are like, you know, on the outskirts of D.C., it's all but like a few token diehard opposition left in the city. The White House will fall. And this is right after the Jesse Plemons scene in which Kaylee Spaney, like a 22-year-old, young war reporter, was made to kneel by a mass grave and nearly put in it. Well, actually, she does fall in it and has to crawl out of it. Yeah. And then Kirsten Dunst is talking to her and she's like, yeah, I was pretty bad, right? And she's like, I know. I've never been more afraid than I was out there. But I've also never felt more alive. And that was the line in which I think like any thread of moral seriousness in this movie was completely obliterated. Because it's just like, I'm supposed to like care about these people when they are just like, you know, war is horrible, but it does give you sort of an authentic life experience that can't be replicated anywhere else. And I'm like, this is your job? Like, fuck off.
Yeah, we're supposed to like love these characters because they're like the only measure of objective truth left in this world. But all this seems to be for them is like a journey of self-actualization. Nothing else. It's just like, you know, a chance to get away from the boring farm or whatever.
The end of this movie is that like Kirsten Dunst's character has to like pass along the war correspondent gene. She has to pass along the war correspondent talisman of courage and bravery and photography to Kaylee Spaney. And she has to do that by giving her life so that Kaylee Spaney can go on to be her in the future. And then, you know, just keep this, just pay it forward. Just pay forward the war corresponding. And now, okay, at this point, I think we should get to what I have advertised as like probably the most gleeful experience I've had in a movie theater of the last year or so, which is the climax of this movie, the last 20 or 30 minutes, which I know Alex Garland wanted this to play like Way City in Full Metal Jacket. But as I said, what I saw on screen was one of the funniest and most entertaining sequences of film that like I've encountered in recent memory. That was a video game in which we were like, I can't tell you how much Catherine and I were laughing when, like, to see the monuments in Washington, D.C. get destroyed. And then, best of all, to see, like I said, the press flags of the evil government just get scoped.
That was awesome. That was worth all the time I spent torrenting this.
Yeah.
That was awesome. I love, like, that. She's such a dumbass. There are like four Secret Service agents left. And she's like, okay, I'm going to negotiate the safe passage of the president. And it's like, what negotiation? You're done. This is done. The Fuhrer bunker. You're dead. And then they just fucking pop her. It's awesome.
Okay. The coolest scene is like they're right outside, like the Western forces are like right outside the White House gates. And like Kirsten Dunst and Waglin Mora and Kayleigh Spanny are like over their shoulder. They're like crouching behind a concrete divider as like a 50 cal machine gun just spits bullets into like the defense of the White House. And then like they think the president, they're like the presidential motorcade. The beast, the heavily armored presidential limousine. They're like, they're making a run for it. And this convoy of like armored cars just like tear out of the White House and then just get shot to shit outside on the street by like Humvees and tanks. And then at one point, there's like a woman in a suit stumbles out of one of the fucking the presidential limousines and just gets brat. And I was like, and the fact that I know that like Alex Garland is like in his head, did he think that this was going to be like a traumatic sequence? Because to me, it was one of the most life-affirming. I was just like, yes, this is how the Newsom Imperium starts. California, yes, you must invade Washington, D.C. You must raise it to the ground like the British did in 1812. And I got to say, I'm going to preface this by saying, in a movie, in a video game, this is an episode reviewing a movie, but in the scene where they're in the West Wing and they're just like, prah, prah, we're throwing smoke, suppressing fire, and just like, you see the staff of the Nick Offerman administration just get riddled with bullets and domed one after the other. I was just saying under my breath, Matthew Miller, Anthony Blinken, John Kirby.
It's so cool.
And I must stress again, in a movie, in my head, not in reality, there is a difference between violence in a movie and violence in my imagination.
If he wanted to make the best movie ever, again, he was so close. If it was just like a Matthew Lesko stand-in leading the Western forces to kill every press flak. It's like you had all the pieces. You just couldn't put it together.
The tanks rolling into DC all have flags with question marks on them.
That is one of my biggest problems with the movie. There was no fighter jets. There was
fighter jets in one scene. There's one flyover.
They don't do anything. So there's an entire civil war. Every state has an Air National Guard. Most of the bigger ones have like advanced F-15 EXs, and they just never use them. What the fuck?
Just imagine, like, once again, this could have been like they could have cranked it into overdrive. Because I think we see the Lincoln Memorial, the Jefferson Memorial, or one of those big, you know, ionic column buildings in DC get blown up with like a, you know, shoulder fired missile. But like there should have been. I wanted to see the Washington Monument fall. I wanted to see, like you said, an F-15 dropping white phosphorus on the Supreme Court as the judges run out. And they're like, no, please, we're only judges.
Oh, my
die.
God.
They just die like dogs.
A dogfight between Mark Kelly and a Groiper. That would have been awesome. But no, he just doesn't have the vision.
It's funny to imagine that the guy launching the shoulder-mounted missile at the like Lincoln Memorial was just like, we got to take out Lincoln. We got to take out the statue of Lincoln. He hated civil wars, and we love
him. No, but like seeing the presidential limousine get riddled with 50 caliber bullets, seeing the people inside of it crawl out like rats and be shot like dogs in the street, I was... This movie filled, again, like in a movie where like the central message is supposed to be America, do not do this. I left the theater vibrating with bloodlust. And I was like, yes, yes, kill the dogs, chop the tall trees in Washington, D.C.
It really makes me think of like Alex Garland when January 6th happened. He was like acting like it was 9/11 and he was watching it on TV. Oh,
for sure.
Oh, my God. I can't believe it. They've breached the doors of the Capitol building, and it really is like oh yeah, you don't think January 6th was a big deal? What about this? Like, this yeah. is what happened.
But yeah, eventually they fight their way into the White House itself, which is being defended by a cadre of like a half dozen Secret Service agents, which is another thing that I think is really funny. Because like, once again, it sort of, I don't know. I really feel like they probably would have gone home or just surrendered. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
You know, they're the Secret Service. They're not, you know, come on. I know they're supposed to take a bullet for the president, but they cannot exactly fend off a full military assault on the White House, even with the small caliber submachine guns that they're armed with. But yeah, the scene with the White House press secretary is just like, we'd like to negotiate terms of our surrender. Will you guarantee the president's safe passage? And then they're like, nope, bye-bye.
That was so funny to me because it's like, what do you think this is? Like, what leg do you have to stand on in negotiations here?
The norms of the United States of America. Yeah, yeah, peaceful transfer of power.
Yeah, let's be like, civil okay, here.
But before President Ron Swanson surrenders, we are willing to appear at the inauguration of the President Gavin Newsom of the Western Forces.
Yeah, we want a good seat.
Yeah.
So, and like, it's basically just like, it's like similar to the Bin Laden raid. It's like a mad dash of guys, like three at a time, trying to get through a door to canoe the president. But crucially, the journalists just want to take a picture of the president right before they put a bullet in his head. And my sadistic glee in watching this sequence of the White House be riddled with bullets, it was burst and it took me out of it in the scene where Kirsten Dunst sacrifices her life to save Kaylee Spaney and allow her to get the best war photo of all time, which is a sequence of three shots in a row of Kirsten Dunst dying.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, wait, I don't care about these people anymore.
Why would that be like the most important thing? Like, oh my god,
the story behind it.
Oh my god, the photo lady died. Presumably, like 100 million people have died, but you killed yeah. the photo lady.
Yeah.
Oh, this war was really bad.
It's like the ending of Soy Cuba happens, where they're like moving the coffin through the streets and everyone stops. But like, at this point, I was like, oh, this movie is just the opposite of The Zone of Interest. It's like the people in the house are like us watching the movie. And it's being like, if you can just get like a sick enough picture of like an atrocity, it'll fix everything. And like, that's like, I feel like that was part of the message of this movie, is like, a camera can be more powerful than a gun.
And I took the opposite message from this movie.
Yeah, and isn't it interesting that we call it shooting even on with both things? And it's so like, it's so stupid.
Yeah, they do that with like, especially with the final scene of the scene right before Kirsten Dunst dies. They really try to draw a parallel between shooting a gun and shooting a camera by like, you know, look, she's part of the fire team. And the, you know, these pictures are stronger than any bullet.
Yeah, picking support in like a like team shooter. It's like when you take pictures, it heals your teammates.
I can't wait for
it gives them a perception buff.
Yeah,
I can't wait for the Civil War Valorant crossover where they introduce Kirsten Dunst's character to that game.
When you're in the lobby, it's like, guys, we can't all be we need a combat soldier. We need at least one.
Hey, you got to be God the journalist last time. Not fair.
It's the most sought after class.
And like, and the way, and like, because like, you know, in the assault on the White House, which I gotta say, this is a genre of movies I'm a fan of. Obviously, Olympus Has Fallen with Gerard Butler, one of my favorite movies. White House Down, not so great. But I got to say, the White House sequence in this movie, I think, really ups the game. And I'm willing to give Alex Garland credit for that, even if it's not entirely what he intended. But like, they're like shooting it out in the hallways of the West Wing, you know? Just be like, hey, a couple months ago, they were doing a walk and talk here. Now they're doing a shoot and kill. and like Kaylee Spaney's character, to get the perfect shot, like gets way out in the middle of the hallway with no cover, just to like take a stupid picture.
And Kirsten of an empty hallway, because there's no one in it at that point.
What was and the Kirsten point Dunst, of that like, scene? To symbolize that her character's stupid?
Yeah. And Kirsten Dunst pushes her out of the way and gets shot and is killed. And like, but not before Kaylee Spaney from the ground takes like three shots of her dying. like, you know, and Robert Capa in the Spanish Civil War.
This is another scene that I was like, very similarly to the old guy dying. There's an earlier scene where Kaylee Spaney asks Kirsten Dunst, like, if I died and got shot, would you take a picture of me and like put it in the Atlantic? She's just like, yeah,
yeah, and yes, it's, that's my pledge, like, to you.
Okay, so that's how Kirsten Dunst is gonna die, like, obviously.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, it is. But the picture isn't even good. It's like a bad picture. Yeah.
It looks like she tripped in the picture.
Yeah, it really, it's mostly the ceiling. And
well, like, earlier, I don't know if you remember this, but earlier in the movie, when they're like in the town that the war has seemingly untouched, they like go to some, like, you know, odds and ends shops, and like she tries on a dress and feels like a woman again. So it feels like a human being. And Kaylee Spaney's like, can I take your photo? And, you know, because she's a photojournalist, she feels very uncomfortable. Like, oh, like, I should be the one taking the photos. I'm not comfortable being photographed myself. So what she does is she tells them, you look beautiful. She tells Kirsten Dunst, you know, you look beautiful when you smile. And then right as she smiles, she takes the photo. It's like the classic people before and after they're told they're beautiful. And you see them light up. And then at the end of the movie, it's just like the same thing, except it's a bullet.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Like, people before and after they told they're going to be shot.
Yeah. Do you think that, like, part of this I felt like this was the entire, like, passing of the torch thing. It's something that you see in a lot of movies that are like this, that feature, like, you know, like a 45-year-old woman lead, where there's like a subtext of like, well, like, this woman, like, never had kids, so she pretty much ruined her life. But we're going to kill her, and like, her role is going to be given to a younger woman who presumably can, like, not be a loser like this bitch.
Yeah, like, it's this. The subtext is like, all right, let's get a move on. We got to get you out of the way.
We need to get this old bitch out of here.
There needs to be a new woman.
the end of the movie should have been like a newspaper headline that says Civil War over, and then just like right under it in like a slightly lower column, new woman discovered.
No, and then
role of national woman passes from Kirsten Dunst to Kaylee Spaney.
And there's the picture is like in the lower corner, you can see like 10 women after being told they're beautiful. It's the first picture of Kirsten Dunst from earlier.
But the denouement of this film is when they actually get into the Oval Office itself to find Nick Offerman cowering under the Resolute desk.
Yeah, this then, is like, when the camera I was watching stopped. And so I don't know what happens from this point forward.
All right, Hassan, well, let me fill you in. So like the Western Alliance forces storm into the Oval Office and find, you know, the evil president who's killed millions, like, cowering beneath his desk like a dog. And then, like, you know, they've made it clear that, like, this is the Führer bunker. First one that gets a gun to his head can pull the trigger and be a legend. And he's just, like, cowering on the floor. And, you know, like, you know, further into this movie's politics, it's very clear that the person who kills him is a woman of color who is leading the assault on the White House. But right before they kill him, Wagner Moura busts in and goes, wait, 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 not yet. I need to get a quote. And then he's like, Mr. President, your thoughts on this? And Nick Offerman's like, please, please don't let them kill me. And he goes, that'll do. And then they, blah, blah, they kill him like a dog. And then the movie ends to the tune Dream Baby Dream by Suicide. And Catherine and I were pumping our fists in the air going, yes, yes, dream, dream the impossible dream. A better world is out there. It is possible if we're willing to fight for it.
It's so, like, funny to hear that, because it's like, it makes me think that he did this on purpose, even though I know he didn't, because of the way he talks about this movie in interviews and shit. But, like, it's so crazy that the whole mission that the movie is based around is to get the quote, like, I think I shit myself. Right before he gets shot in the head.
He lost his two best friends to get that. Yes. Like, presumably his, like, two only friends.
Yes.
I should make clear, I only endorse violence in movies and not in reality. But of course, like, as we were leaving the theater, Catherine and I were just killing ourselves imagining that final scene, but in the Joe Biden White House where there's like an ongoing firefight in the White West Wing, but he's just wandering around with like an ice cream or like milk and cookies, just being like, I'll tell you what, Jack, someone turn the lights back on in here. What's going on?
Oh my God.
There's just a bullet goes through his milk glass and he's like, what the heck, buddy?
I'm picturing him in like a Night Before Christmas, like pajamas with like, a nightcap, a candle in a dish.
He's just dunking a cookie as his staff are slaughtered around him.
Every time he hears a gunshot, he thinks he's farting. Whoa, sorry about that one. It would suck so much to be like a secret. I know it's their job and shit. They probably kind of like it when this happens, but like, imagine dying for Joe Biden. That sucks so much.
It's like I really think the creme de la creme of Secret Service is like finding like being on the counterfeit money team. Yeah, I feel like that's got to be the way funner one. Yeah,
they should have had Clint Eastwood play the president in this movie. That would have been way better than Nick Offerman.
It would have been really funny if it was Clint Eastwood.
And it's like, and they did, and like you didn't see him throughout the entire movie, and then it's just like 93-year-old Clint in the final scene being like, "Please don't let them kill me."
His last words are, "I don't feel very lucky."
So, I mean, like I said, the movie was pretentious dog shit that I hated until the last 30 minutes. And I got to give him credit for making me leave a movie theater really feeling something.
Yeah, it turned into the feel good movie of the year. Like, yeah. To be honest.
I can't believe that's how it ended. Like, I thought I was, my camera was missing like 10 minutes, but apparently it was missing
maybe 30 seconds. Yeah. The usher came in, he had to close his cell phone.
Yeah.
But thank you to Alex Garland for your Civil War. But outside of that, go back to England, bitch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make a movie about Keir Starmer's cousin.
Yeah.
Shout out to Women for West Reading on Twitter who found Keir Starmer's cousin. This guy's awesome. We love
Women for West. To correct the record, I gotta say Women for West did get me with their fake iced tea post about Keir Starmer, so I apologize.
Oh, I knew
listeners.
That was fake. I reposted
but,
it
but
anyway.
Doff my cap to Women for West for their very funny post that did indeed fool me.
I think something that jumped out at me about this movie also is that it's funny that in an interview Alex Garland was like, I'm done directing. That's my least favorite part. I just like writing movies and stuff.
Fuck off. Really... You're not Quentin Tarantino. No one cares if you retire from making movies.
Yeah, but I was like, the directing is kind of the part that he's good at. Like, there are some like fun, like some cool shots in this. And I'm like, I don't know, like, you're good at, you like doing the wrong thing. This is kind of annoying.
Yeah, I don't know how you could watch this movie and be like, oh, writing is a strong suit.
Yeah.
And one element about the writing in this movie, a lot of people have pointed this out about the movie, but there's a hilarious scene where Kaylee Spanny is asking Kirsten Stewart, like, how'd you become a war correspondent? And she's like, I'm your idol. You should know this. And she's like, I do, but what's the story? She's like, I know the story about how you got the most badass photo ever of the Antifa massacre. And I was like, yes. And by the way, in the opening credit sequence of this movie, where they show like real footages of sort of civil social unrest in America, several of the video clips from that opening montage were culled from the archives of one Andy No-Go Zone. So, I mean, like, I don't think Alex Garland is a right winger by any stretch of the imagination. I just think he's a dum-dum that, like, doesn't know what he thinks or believes. And it's, like, just essentially too gullible to, like, include, you know, I mean, the footage is the footage. I don't think there's, like, an ideological valence to it. But Andy No-Go Zone is thanked in the credits of this movie.
Yeah. And a funny thing about that scene where Kaylee Spaney is asking Kirsten Dunst, like, tell me the full story. I know you got the cool picture of the Antifa massacre, but what's missing from the full story, from the Wikipedia page? And Kirsten Dunst is just like, I don't know, like, not a lot. It pretty much covered most of it. Like, I can't even remember what she says, but it's something that's like, I was like, that's it. Like, it's not even interesting. Like, I think she's just like, yeah, my parents live in Colorado or something. It's so stupid.
I will just say that to add to the real war correspondents are like, one of my various jobs in a previous media career was videoing a series of interviews between the guy who owns Brooklyn Brewery and war correspondents, because that guy apparently was
what the fuck.
Well, that guy in a previous life was a war correspondent.
How did you not bring a suicide vest really? To that?
Well, this is the thing that I wanted to say is that after just doing like a half dozen of these, my main takeaway from all these war correspondents who, you know, did work documenting atrocities and stuff is that all these people just basically just want to die in a way that makes them feel cool and morally good. Like, yeah. That's the profile of a war correspondent. Suicide, but I don't have to do it.
They all get their wish. Every correspondent who dies in this kind of gets their wish, if that's, you know, the end goal. They get to go to journalist Valhalla, where, yeah, you know, the dark yes, room exactly. is always open and like, I don't know what else. The film
whiskey
is free.
Always flows. Yeah. Dark room is always open, and there's always a damn good story and a deadline to be met.
Yeah, it's like Truman Capote and chopping it up with Katie Herzog.
Oh my God! Could you imagine the witty banter between the two of them?
Maybe that'll be on the DVD. Like there'll be a post-credit scene where Alex Garland uses AI to redo the dogs playing poker thing, but it's journalists playing poker, and it's called Bastards in Heaven.
Bastards in Heaven.
All right. Well, that was Civil War, but I do not want to end this episode without first plugging again season 2 of Movie Mindset, featuring myself and Essa. We'll be talking about movies we actually like. But season 1 kicked off this week with our James Cagney episode. But also, I would like to reiterate my offer to please come watch Death Wish 3 with Hesse and I at May 4th on Littlefield. Tickets will be available in the show description. Follow that link. Get a ticket. And let me just like give you like a preview of Death Wish 3, because I think it pairs very well with Civil War, in that I will just share with you that the last 20 to 30 minutes of Death Wish 3 are probably the most narcotically enjoyable 20 to 30 minutes of film ever captured. But it has none of the sententious morality of Civil War. It is just a pure turkey shoot and madhouse of just the absolutely nihilistic slaughter of human life, directed by a genuinely evil man who has no pretensions of, caring about human life. So please come out and watch Death Wish 3. You will not be disappointed. It will be one of the funner sort of shared movie theater experiences you can have.
Yes.
I guess that does it for us. And the Civil War, don't do it.
There's nothing civil about war, folks.
Oh my right. God, Hesse. If he had dropped at the end of the movie, instead of Suicide's Dream Baby Dream, Guns N' Roses, Civil War, that he would have been a god. I would have no complaints about this movie, because it would be the perfect ending to this movie, because, you know, Guns N' Roses, Civil War is one of the dumbest but also best songs of all time.
I think it should have been like, war. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing.
All right. Till next time, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.